Okay, I am back for an actual podcast episode. And I'm trying to modulate my volume here. Sorry about that. Let's see if we can do two in a week now. I wanted to talk a little bit, and I didn't get any feedback about the last one. So I always like to start off by making corrections. Nobody sent me anything that I said wrong or sent me angry messages or even nice messages. So we'll just go ahead with today's topic, which is kind of a short one, but basically it's about why do we take the effort to examine the brain of someone like a mass shooter? Okay, and this is in context. If you've seen some of my posts this week that I made on Substack, I saw that there was a an article. It was on CNN. I didn't see it anywhere else. Where the mass shooter in Maine back in October, the medical examiner asked that the brain be sent to a brain bank to be studied specifically for CTE. Now, for the uninitiated, CTE is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, okay? And a little bit of background here. I'm not going to go deeply into the pathology of CTE, but this is the subject of the movie Concussion with Will Smith and the neuropathologist. He's also a forensic pathologist, of course, who, quote-unquote, discovered the entity of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, in which people who have taken multiple blows to the head have personality changes, often involving things like violence or erratic behavior. Now, why did I say that in quotes? Why did I say discover in quotes? Because this has become kind of a controversial topic in the field, where there are some people who don't believe that it is a thing, and then there are others who believe that this is a distinct pathological entity. Go ahead and count me in the column of those who believe that it is a pathological entity. Most of the people who don't believe that it is, they are influenced by organizations who don't want there to be such a disease, because and by influenced I just mean paid. You know, I mean, we know what that means. But chronic traumatic encephalopathy in this particular case, we're going to get to why they were looking at that, but CTE, usually involving multiple blows to the head, things like football, things like soccer. I mean, you can even get into sports like lacrosse and things like that, where there and rugby, where there happens to be contact with the head. And those individuals exhibit personality changes, behavioral changes, sometimes severe depression, anxiety, severe aggression, and many times they actually commit suicide. And unfortunately, they also commit homicides. And that's why we're talking about this today. Back in October in Maine, there was a mass shooting. And I know that you remember it. It was horrific. Many people were killed, most of which were at a bowling alley, I believe. And the perpetrator of this event was a man who was in the military and apparently, by all accounts, had suffered potential head and brain injuries and had even been evaluated because of psychiatric symptoms he was having. So, sorry, I had to take a drink there. My throat gets very dry in the winter and I have to take a drink. So every now and then, by the way, I'm not drinking alcohol. It's literally water. But anyway, so the problem is here is that we see a guy who has a history of erratic behavior. He has a history of psychiatric evaluation, concern that this man should even have weapons, who then, just a handful of weeks later, decides to go and kill a bunch of innocent people for no reason. He then goes and he shoots himself. And then, of course, the body is brought to the medical examiner's office. Now, this is where it gets a little bit dicey for the general public. Now, for a person like me who's a scientist, for many of the people who listen to this podcast who are also interested in science, it's obvious that we have to understand why these things occur. However, when I talk about these things to a general public, I often get, I'll get a lot of pushback. And I didn't even make a TikTok video on this because the worst of the worst individuals are on TikTok. And I frankly don't want 500 of the same comments, which all of which are like, is my taxpayer money paying for this? And it's like, look, Carl, they're not taking your debit card and running that charge to pay for this autopsy. I mean, these are public funds. This money is apportioned to do things like this. So it's really not that big of a deal. But because I just don't feel like having to block delete every single one of those people, I decided to just make it a podcast. So at any rate, that's often the question. That's often the irritation from the public is, why are we investigating this in this way? We know what happened. He shot himself. Well, see, now that's where I disagree. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know until we investigate it, I should say. And so the reason why it's important to do this is because, like a full autopsy in that case, is because A, it is a criminal act, and we need to document everything about that criminal act. B, there's always going to be this subset of conspiracy theorists who allege that something else happened. So we, of course, if it does look like a suicide, we are bound to prove that it is a suicide. And we do that with our autopsy techniques. And we photograph everything. We make sure that the gunshot wounds, or wound in the case of a suicidal gunshot wound, matches up. And someday, if somebody wants to review the evidence, they can look and see that, in fact, it all checks out. So that's the reason why we do the autopsy. Now we're getting into, why does the medical examiner make the choice to send that brain? And this, to me, was a very important decision that I actually agree with. And I think that anybody who has any intellectual curiosity would agree that this is the right thing to do. Because as much as people don't want to accept it, these mass violence situations are a problem in this country, and it is fairly unique to this country. And I know I have a lot of listeners around the world, but I'm talking about the United States. And we have to, in my opinion, gain as much information as we can for why they happen. And so by studying that brain, it's going to give us information for future reference, let's put it that way. So let's just talk a little bit really quickly about how this is done. Okay, first of all, we know this man died of a gunshot wound of the head. He committed the violence, the mass shooting, with an assault rifle, a high-powered rifle. But we don't know that the gunshot wound that he died from was from that high-powered rifle. And the reason why that's relevant to me is that high-power rifle gunshot wounds, particularly the suicidal variety, sometimes they will actually explode the head, and they will destroy the brain almost completely. It'll literally blow the brains out of the head sometimes. Other times, the bullet will pass through, and it will cause a lot of damage along the bullet track, but actually leaves a fair amount of brain intact. I would have to assume that that's what happened in this case, but also people have multiple guns. Sometimes they will shoot and kill somebody with one gun, and they will kill themselves with another gun. So a handgun, for instance, and I mean like a 9mm or a 38 or something like that, if used as a gunshot wound in the head, the amount of damage produced to the brain is certainly enough to kill someone instantly, but not enough to impede the study of that brain. So I have to assume in this case that the medical examiner saw a brain that was reasonably intact and said, okay, we want to have this sent. They sent it to a doctor. Her name's Amy McKee. She's extremely well known when in the field of brain study, neuropathology, brain bank. She's in the Northeast, or she used to be in the Northeast. I know that's where she was set up, I believe, in Boston there for a while. And if you're listening, Amy, and you want to correct me, just send me an email. I know I personally have sent Dr. McKee brains before, also looking for CTE and other studies that we've had to do. I will sometimes, as a autopsy pathologist, have a request from a family, please send the brain, and then we send it to Amy McKee. I have had, believe it or not, I have had to do autopsies on NFL players whose families then asked us, can you please send the brain to have it evaluated for chronic traumatic encephalopathy? So the medical examiner in Maine sent it back in October, and those studies take a while, okay? So what happens is usually that brain is sent one of two ways. It can be sent fresh, where they actually put it in a bucket with ice, and they will send that to the lab. They'll overnight it, FedEx or something like that. And I'm not joking. It really is sending in FedEx just like anything else. It's just a biological specimen. And then when it gets to the lab, they will begin their preparation. Other times what they'll do is they will ask for the brain to be cut in half, and half of the brain be fixed in formalin, a formaldehyde solution, and the other half left fresh, or sometimes if frozen, if possible, and then they'll send that. The point is, when it gets to the lab, then the neuropathology lab can decide what they want to do in preparation of that brain. And that's going to include things like, first of all, gross anatomical examination. So if you saw my Substack post from today, which is March the 9th, 2024, I actually did a nice post on traumatic brain injuries where I show what severe cerebral contusions look like. And it's a really great post, honestly. If you want to go check it out, Dr. Darren Wolf Substack, you can go there and have a look. Also, the link to that Substack is up on my Instagram if you want to go check that out, which is The Dead Letter. I think I also put it on TikTok too. So, you know, I wanted everybody to see it because it's really, the photos are really great. So basically, like I was saying, histologic, gross examination to see things like that, because the post that I put up is gross examination, macroscopic examination with the naked eye. And basically examining the brain, is it symmetric? Is there visible damage to the brain? Where is that visible damage? Are there any congenital abnormalities of that brain? Are there any vascular abnormalities of that brain? So once that's done, then of course, then you're going to cut the brain in a way that a neuropathologist will cut the brain that we all learn during residency. Specific cuts, specific techniques and sections that we take maybe differs a little bit depending on where you train, but those sections will be looked at under the microscope, and they will be evaluating things like like for CTE, is there signs of chronic damage to that brain, and where within that brain is the chronic damage. So as it turns out, this person in Maine. Now, I don't ever use the name of a mass shooter. I don't feel at that point the dignity is there to even use their name after they do something like that. That's just a personal thing that I do. If I was running a media company, I simply would never use their name. Some mass shooters do commit that act in order to get their name in the news. I don't think that was the case with this Maine mass shooter. I believe that he had, fallen into deep psychotic kind of like paranoia as a result of whatever underlying psychiatric illness and brain damage. And I don't really think that was his aim in this case, was to get his name in the news. But nonetheless, I don't use the name of mass shooters. I just kind of refer to them generically. And so basically, sorry, I had to take a drink here again. Again, that's just water. But Okay, so the whole point of this is that they did the examination and they did not find signs of CTE, of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, but he did have signs of damage to that brain. So what does this all mean? Well, it means that could it be that his history of working in the military, I think he was working, as I understand it, in an area where there was grenade blasts and things like that. And could he have had a concussive injury to his brain, which over time cumulatively produced enough damage to where he did start to have what I would call a neuropsychiatric complication? So in other words, he's inflicted, this damage has been inflicted, which then is causing him to become psychotic. It's kind of disturbing to think about that, but it's true that you can have injury to the brain and then it changes who you are as a person. We see that a lot. I shouldn't say a lot, but a lot of times when I'll do an autopsy, I'll get the history of this man had been in a car accident or this man had been hit in the head with a baseball bat, 4 years prior or something, and his family will report that, he hasn't been the same since, that kind of thing. And so it's important to us. It's certainly important from a neuropathologic perspective. But why in this case or in cases like this is this particularly important? Because the questions that I get, the comments that I get is it's all done. Nobody's being brought back. Lots of people have been killed. Why waste time doing this? And that is the essential question that we have to answer here. And the answer is we do it because we need to know why things like this happen. Could this help us understand why such terrible tragedies happen? I personally, as a scientist, I think it's important to understand why these things happen. And it could be important in the future. Like, let's just say, for instance, the military now, folks that are in these positions where they are exposed to these low-level blasts as part of their training, perhaps this will cause those in the military to implement measures to prevent individuals from having brain damage. Okay? That's important, obviously. Secondly, and this is obviously a tough thing for people to hear because people get very upset when we talk about gun legislation, but is it possible that individuals with severe enough damage to the brain should be monitored, should have to go through neuropsychiatric testing and possibly MRIs and things like that if they are to have weapons? I mean, in this case, the man was on a psychiatric hold, and then 2 weeks later, or perhaps it was 3 weeks later, he goes in and he kills like 16 people. So it's a question we have to answer because that data becomes important. It becomes important later. I think that these cases should have as much study as possible. And it's tough to hear for people because there's a lot of anger in these cases for when they happen. Why are we wasting our time studying them? But from a scientific perspective, we just have to do it. I mean, first of all, you have to ask yourself, is it a problem? And I think that unless you're clinically insane, everyone would think that it is a problem that a person can go in and kill, a dozen or more of innocent people who are doing nothing. I think that that's a problem. Then the next step is, if it's a problem, then how do we solve it? And we cannot solve problems unless we have information about those problems. And so that's kind of the purpose of pathology altogether is to answer questions, to give diagnoses, which can then help individuals make such decisions. And sometimes we're talking, we're kind of on the Venn diagram here where legislation is overlapping with medicine. I do think that this will become important someday. This case will be used to talk about how do brain injuries affect kind of the neuropsychiatric health of individuals, and if it's damaged enough, should they be given, should they be allowed to have weapons in free use? Of course, I'm not a politician, so I'm not going to try to suggest at this point what exactly we should do. I'm telling you from a pathologist's perspective, I absolutely agree with the decision to send this brain and have it studied. It's just, I think that some individuals get very scared that to study these cases is going to result in, you know, like an immediate gun ban or something like that for anybody who has, you know, some kind of brain injury. But that's not how it works. Unfortunately, this is a long process, a data gathering process, an information gathering process to help us understand why these problems are occurring. So that's really all I have to say about this particular case. I just thought it was instructive to talk about and to kind of give perspective on why we have to study cases like this, even though the outcome is known, the cause of death is known, the manner of death is known, and unfortunately, individuals who have been harmed and families that have been harmed will not give their loved get their loved ones back. As a society, if we are to move forward as a society, we have to do something about cases like this. So if you have any questions or comments, you can reach me on my various social media websites. Again, that's TikTok is the dead letter. Instagram is the dead letter. Substack is right now where I'm starting to put most of my stuff. Dr. Darren Wolf, I think if you type that in there, you can probably find me. If not, I have it in my link tree at TikTok, and I very frequently have it on my story at Instagram. Substack is a good place for me because I don't get any bans or community guidelines violations, so I can show you a lot more than I can on other sites. I think it's particularly good for anybody who's learning medicine, nursing, any kind of healthcare field. I'm showing a lot of pathology that you don't get to see otherwise. So please consider that. Otherwise, thanks for listening. Hopefully, if this new system I've got continues to work, I'm going to be able to put up podcasts a lot more often. Thanks again.